Our story in
what
Indonesia.
Is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran has once again agreed to commit itself to cooperating with the International Atomic Energy Agency. IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi, after visiting Iran and returning to Vienna, said that both sides understand the importance of positive engagements in paving the way for wider agreements. However, the director of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, has said that Tehran won't give in to Washington's maximum pressure campaign and attempts to pressure the country through the UN nuclear watchdog. Well, what does all of this mean? Stay with me on the spotlight so we can look at the significance of all of this. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Elijah McNair, journalist and political analyst out of Brussels. And Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector out of Bethlehem, New York. Well, thank you both for being with me. And start this off in Brussels. And Elijah, your thoughts. How significant do you think Grossi's recent visit to Iran and the comments that both sides have made afterwards? How significant is it overall?
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
I think it's extremely significant because it de-escalates the tension between Europe, the United States, and Iran and the agency. Because Iran took several steps just to send a clear message to the U.S. that the nuclear deal should be on the table, should be respected, and there is a need for all parties to return to it. And any step that is taken by the U.S., imposing more sanctions on Iran or keeping the harsh sanctions, it means Iran will have to escalate, keeping in mind that since 2015, when the JCPOA was agreed, the U.S. did not respect fully the agreement. And in 2018, the Americans left the agreement. And for Iran to start coming out of the agreement, it took a full year until 2019. And only when Biden took the power, then Iran started to increase the enrichment uranium. For the main request of Iran for the IAEA to remain professional and to keep its professionalism, not to be involved in politics. And I think Iran was referring to the November announcement of Rafael Grossi when he said he was concerned about Iranian hypersonic missiles. This is not the job of the IAEA to monitor Iranian missiles, but to monitor the enrichment uranium and to make sure that Iran is abiding by agreement. So when Grossi said he's neither pessimistic or optimistic, this is a very huge step. It means that all the call of the European countries involved in the JCPOA that were calling to escalate against Iran is frozen at the moment until the final decision is reached following Grossi's report.
Okay, well, what about you, Scott? How do you see this latest move or this action that is taking place right now between Iran and the IAEA? You heard what Elijah said, that he felt that it was very significant. Do you agree that it is significant, and do you agree that it can help calm tensions or not?
No, I believe this is significant. It's what I would call escalation management by the Iranians. They've, of course, taken a very hard-line principled stand on the allowing the United States back into the JCPOA. There were the termination of those talks, or at least the cessation of those talks, has caused problems and created uncertainty in Vienna, especially amongst the European participants in this agreement. And there are several unresolved issues that are well known. Grossi and the Iranian side have talked about this. And if these unresolved issues were left to percolate on their own, it would just complicate what I believe is, you know, Iran wants, which is the United States to indeed return under the conditions set forth by Iran. There are some complicated back channel discussions apparently taking place between Iran and the United States. And the last thing either the Americans or the Iranians need is for the IAEA to be escalating tension by further sanctioning, further calling out of Iran. So these talks, as the gentleman from Brussels indicated, they put a freeze on that pressure. They put it on hold.
Well, Scott, let me just jump in with what you just said. You talked about that the last thing that would be needed, according to you, that there's some talks being that are taking place. But you said that the last thing needed would be the IAEA to sanction, for example, Iran, and hindering the possibilities of things moving forward. Do you think that the IAEA really works independently of the United States to make such a decision on its own?
The IAEA works on momentum, and right now the momentum is generated by unresolved issues. And so these take on a life of their own. And as I said, left unresolved, this momentum will go forward and cause an increase in tensions. And I also believe that the United States is engaged in back channel talks. It's been denied, but there's apparent reason to believe that this is indeed the case. So the United States would be sending signals, discrete signals, to the IAEA and to Vienna to allow the Grossi talks to go forward and to create the opportunity to freeze on this. Nothing happens in isolation, but I think it's in the United States' interest to have this issue stabilized and not spin out of control.
Of course, Elijah, from the Iranian government side, we know that so far they said without the United States changing its MO, it is not interested in actually talking with the United States and dealing with the JCPOA in that frame with them. But in general, do you think that the IAEA can be an honest broker when dealing with Iran, Elijah?
What is important is to see both sides. From the Iranian side, Iran needs some trustful indication from the IAEA. When we hear Grossi talking about the Iranian missiles, this is not his job. He's sending very strong message to Iran to say, well, I'm not that neutral and I am not really not taking a side. And because there is a deal and is signed by both parties, there is no need for trust. And when we see the deal is broken by one side, it means the trust is completely absent. So it is the right of Iran to feel and to understand that the IAEA, that is an international organization under the control of the United Nations, means it is also under the control of the United States and other Western allies, because they were the driving force to push the IAEA to go to Iran, to put pressure on Iran and say, well, we have an independent job. The problem is it is not in the capability of the IAEA to establish this trust with Iran, because there is no trust with the U.S. and because the U.S. left the JCPOA and European did not respect their end of the bargain. So trust is absent. Therefore, it is in the right of Iran to think that Rafael Grossi, at the end of the day, is not someone who is completely neutral and professional, and Iran to walk very cautiously with Grossi, particularly when he said, we want the return of the camera to operate and have access. And the Iranian said, well, all the chips and all the films are there, but we abide by the decision of our council, and you will have it at the end of the negotiation when everything returned to normality. So Iran is saying, why should I abide by the West's request when the West is not doing anything and is not holding the end of the deal on its side?
What about that, Scott? I mean, from the Iranian perspective, they've seen a lot of different things. For example, questioning even the independence of the IAEA, have seen information, critical information that It has been shared, apparently, for example, with Israel. So with that scenario, in your perspective, I mean, how can this move forward? What can happen? What needs to happen?
What needs to happen is what's happening. I don't think anybody should be under any illusions that Iran views the IAEA as a truly independent actor. They know the history of the IAEA. They know the role played by the IAEA. They know the pressure that the IAEA has put under from the United States and others. They also understand diplomacy. They understand the need for back channels and front channels, and sometimes those channels operate at the same time. And right now, Iran, I believe, has a back channel of communications with the United States that needs to remain out of no sunlight because of the delicate nature, the politically sensitive nature of the topics. And so we have the front channel, Grossi. Grossi would not have gone to Iran without the permission of the United States. Grossi's itinerary was approved by the United States, and Grossi is reporting back to the United States. But this is a channel designed to create stability. It's not meant to be something separate from the other negotiations. They're part and parcel of the same thing, but diplomacy sometimes requires multiple tracks.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Elijah, Iran may allow the cameras to roll again inside various facilities. Of course, this is after talks go forward and possible agreements are made. I mean, your overall thoughts about that possibility. Do you see Iran going beyond its responsibilities or no? Is it just doing the bare minimum? How do you assess all of this?
We have two sides. The side of the Iranian saying, I want to return to JCPOA and I will abide by all its articles. And we have the other side saying I can't offer any guarantee that further sanctions are not going to be imposed on you again. This is what Iran is asking for, the guarantee that Biden not only failed to provide, but has increased from 3,600 sanctions imposed on Iran, and he added several hundred additional sanctions. This is not someone with a good faith and who want to return to JCPOA. Therefore, there is no need and there is no reason for the U.S. to return to JCPOA as long as Iran is saying, I am not making the nuclear bomb. So why would any U.S. president who is looking after and protecting his dominance of the world release dozens of billions of dollars frozen in the Western banks, society, companies, and countries that belong to Iran for Iran become stronger? There's no U.S. president that's going to do that as long as Iran is saying, I am not making the bomb. So what Iran is doing, Iran is showing concession after concession and taking a harsh step in retaliation. So it's always on the defense, never took the initiative to attack and respond to the position that was taken by President Trump in 2018. So it went gradually, telling the West, I am going to escalate if you continue. And the West really doesn't care. So saying the cameras will roll again or we keep all the films until we reach an agreement is showing good faith from Iran that the West is not going to take on board.
So let me stay with you, Elijah, pick up on what you've just said. So you're saying, because if we look at your statement, you're saying because Iran is saying it's not making the nuclear bomb, that there's no reason for the U.S. to really negotiate. Well, from the very beginning, Iran said, in the very beginning of all of this, it has said continuously that it is not after nuclear bomb or nuclear weapons, that actually the leader of the Islamic Revolution has said it is forbidden, as a matter of fact, for Iran to create the bomb. So with that being said, according to your premise, then how did we get here? Because if it's true that they're not going to do anything either way, then what was all of this about to begin with?
It is about Iran's influence in the Middle East. It is about Iran establishing allies in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, where it is spoiling the U.S. and Israel plan. And President Obama tried, President Biden, President Trump tried also to include other dossiers rather than keeping only very strict on the nuclear dossier, because they want Iran to lift his hand on its allies in the Middle East and violate its own constitution to protect and support all the oppressed people in the world. So by this behavior, what the West calls the malign behavior of Iran, and they really are pointing out to that, they just don't consider the several tens of U.S. military bases surrounding Iran and established all over in the Middle East and Central Asia. So this is the main problem, is Iran nuclear peaceful program, but is above all it Iranian drones, Iranian precision missiles, and its support to its allies. This is what is the problem that is created today between Iran and the West.
Scott, what about that? Is this all about just putting pressure on Iran for Iran basically not to support its allies in the region, to change the overall perspective of the Islamic Republic? Is it all just an excuse?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that American policy towards Iran is not driven by logic, but by emotion. And at the root of it, of course, is the takeover of the U.S. embassy and holding Americans hostage. And I know that was a long time ago, but it resonates deeply with almost every American. I also think that we can't give short shrift to Israel's concerns. Israel's interpretation of Iran's nuclear program as any enrichment capability whatsoever constitutes a nuclear capability. And that's why Israel insists on zero enrichment. And now that Iran's taken it up to over 60% enrichment, you know, they are literally months away from being able to enrich highly enriched uranium. And even though Iran has said that they won't do this, this is in violation of, you know, Islamic law. There's a fatwa against it. That doesn't make the Israelis feel any more comfortable. And the United States can't ignore Israeli concerns. But from the American perspective, too, I think we're looking at that there's a growing realization about the nexus between China, Russia, and Iran, that this troika of nations that are being increasingly isolated by the United States and Europe have found a way to come together, join with the rest of the world to create sort of a center of gravity that's independent of American and European influence. And this is very problematic. And so I do see the United States having an interest in trying to improve relations with Iran, to keep Iran connected to the West, to help slow down Iran's eastward transition. So it's a very complicated topic. I believe that nuclear issues are very much part of it, but Iran's regional presence is, as the gentleman said, Elijah said, the alleged malign activities are there. But I also think there's this new element, this new global reality based upon BRICS and economics, et cetera, and the need by many in the United States to keep Iran from totally jumping ship, to find some mechanism to keep Iran engaged with the West. And the JCPOA would be that mechanism.
Well, Scott, just keeping in line with what you're saying, that because of this troika, this nexus that is taking place, the United States wants better relations with Iran. But the United States has continued to sanction Iran time after time again. So what does that mean? On the one hand, your analysis, you're saying that they do not want Iran to make this move to the east. But on the other hand, so not only did Trump leave the JCPOA, Biden has not returned to it. And during Biden's presidency, we have seen more sanctions against Iran. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, I think what it means is this is a policy of, hey, very much in transition, and we're in the early stages of this transition, and it's a policy that may never gain traction. You know, all the things you mentioned took place prior to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. If you don't think the Russian invasion of Ukraine and what has happened in the global scene has influenced every aspect of American policy, then I would say that you're probably misinformed about American policy. We're concerned about China. We're concerned about a nexus between Russia and China. And now you have the added factor of Iran being driven into that company. So I believe that there are people right now in the Biden administration, in the national security establishment, that are concerned about this. This is a new development. But I do believe this is why you don't see the United States simply walk away from the JCPOA. This is why I believe that you see the United States still working behind the scenes to get the JCPOA up and running, because in their belief that would keep Iran engaged with the West in a potentially constructive manner and slow down and hopefully at some point in time stop the drift to the Russian-Chinese new center of gravity.
Elijah, I saw you shaking your head. Your thoughts on those comments?
I'm not sure the U.S. is really concerned and still interested in the JCPOA. I think Russia, the U.S. is concerned to make sure that this is not going to be the time when Iran is going to make a nuclear bomb while Biden is in power. So as long as Biden is there, he doesn't want to be remembered as the one who pushed Iran toward making nuclear weapons, because simply the U.S. doesn't believe in fatwa or in what the Grand Ayatollah Imam Khamenei said about is forbidden. They think, well, Iran has reached 60%. It means we are several months away from the 90%.
Elijah, do you really believe that the United States believed that?
Oh, yeah. The United States believes that Iran can go toward the nuclear weapon, and it is just enough for the Grand Ayatollah Khamenei to say, generally speaking, all fatwas can be revoked. Then we will see a completely different behavior from the United States saying, well, now the nuclear weapon is on the Iranian table, and then we have to behave differently. But as long as the U.S. saying, well, we listen to what the Iranians are saying, we control them through the IAEA, we make sure that they're not going beyond the 60%. They all jump when they saw only residue of 84, not an enrichment to 84, 83.7%.
Okay.
So I think the objective is to make sure that this is not going to be a nuclear military weapon in Iran during the Biden administration. This is the only Biden's concern today.
Okay, and let me just turn to Scott, because I only have a couple of minutes left. Sorry, Elijah. Scott, you mentioned that this the U.S. and trying to get closer to Iran. But on the other hand, we talked about the Israeli factor and how Israel is very concerned about Iran and attaining a nuclear bomb, of course, that we've been hearing out of Tel Aviv for a long time right now. But at the other hand, we know that the Israelis actually possess nuclear weapons. So how does all of this fit in? On the one hand, we have the IAEA here talking about Iran and making sure that they abide by their agreements that they've gone beyond. On the other hand, you're talking about the U.S. wanting to get close to Iran, of course, but under the control, or at least they're following the Israeli line. So at the end of the day, what does it all mean?
Well, it means the nuclear nonproliferation policy is in a flux. I mean, the inherent contradictions where Iran is a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty and has been abiding by all of its obligations under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The United States is seeking to impose obligations beyond the Non-Proliferation Treaty on Iran while receiving pressure from Israel, who hasn't signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty, won't sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and has pursued an independent nuclear weapons program. There's just absolute illogic in this. So it's very difficult to find some sort of path toward consistency, which is why everything we're talking about today is so frustrating, because it's not black and white. It's a very, you know, numerous shades of gray. But again, now we come back to the original thing. That's why I think the discussion between Grossi and the Iranians is important, because it does provide, you know, some foundation of stability upon which hopefully, you know, a logical progression towards a resolution of this problem can be reached.
Okay.
But it's very complicated.
All right. And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on Spotlight. Out of Brussels, Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst out of Bethlehem, New York. Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَعِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنًا وَإِذَا خَاطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا
And the servants of the Most Merciful are those who walk upon the earth easily. And when the ignorant address them harshly, they say words of peace.
وَالَّذِينَ يَبِيتُونَ لِرَبِّهِمْ سُجَّدًا وَقِيَامًا
And those who spend part of the night to their Lord, prostrating and standing in prayer.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this verse of the chapter.
وعباد الرحمن الذين يمشون على الأرض هونا وإذا خاطبهم الجاهلون قالوا سلاما. And the servants of the beneficent are those who walk on the earth humbly, and when the ignorant address them, they answer peace. وَالَّذِينَ يَبِيتُونَ لِرَبِّهِمْ سُجَّدًا وَقِيَامًا. And the ones who spend the night prostrating themselves before their Lord and standing. We said from this verse, there is this discussion about the attributes of the Almighty Allah's special slaves under the title of Ibadur Rahman. The first and second attributes of them were mentioned. The first being that they walk on the earth humbly, and the second is that they have this patience to answer the ignorant addressing them. They say peace. And in this verse, the third attribute of them, that is the sincere worshipping of the Almighty Allah, is mentioned. It says, وَالَّذِينَ يَبِيتُونَ لِرَبِّهِمْ سُجَّدًا وَقِيَامًا. And those who spend the night prostrating themselves before their Lord and standing. In the darkness of the night, when the eyes of the ignorant are all sleeping, when there is no place for hypocrisy, a believer deprives himself of this pleasant, sweet sleep and does what is more pleasant, that is the remembrance of Allah, that is prostrating and standing before Him, the Magnificent. He spends some part of night supplicating Him, and this is what illuminates his heart and soul with His name and remembrance. This is about which the Holy Prophet ﷺ has said, performing two rak'ahs of prayer in the midnight is better than the world and what is in it. And verily, if it were not difficult for my nation, I would make this prayer compulsory for them. He has said elsewhere, when man gets out of his pleasant bed while his eyes are drowsy, he tries to make his Lord pleased and happy by this night prayer. It is the time when Allah takes pride in him and says, do you not see my servants getting out of their pleasant beds for a prayer that I did not make it a must on them? Be witness that I'm forgiving them. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine.
In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Though the Quranic phrase yabituna, the one who is spending the night, indicates that they spend the night prostrating and standing before him, it is clear that its purpose is considerable part of the night. Or if its purpose is all the night, sometimes it is also. This being said, coming the word prostrating before standing might be because of its importance. Though in prayer, salat, prostrating is practically after standing, but in this case, it might be because of its importance. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us up to this part. Let us now have a look at some of the words of the Ahlul Bayt and the Infallibles on the importance of night prayers and tahajjud. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has said, "One who does not perform night prayer is not of our Shias." And in this regard, Imam Ridha alayhi salam has said, "Do perform night prayer. There is no servant who gets up at the end of the night and performs 8 rak'ahs of night prayer, 2 rak'ahs of even prayer, and 1 rak'ah of odd prayer, and asks pardon of Allah 70 times in personal prayer, unless Allah protects him from the chastisement of grave and chastisement of fire. And the Almighty Allah prolongs his life and gives him his provisions generously." And then Imam alayhi salam continues, "Verily, the homes in which night prayer is performed, its light illuminates before the inhabitants of the heaven as stars glow for the people of the earth." Upon the importance of this concept, also Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has said, "Night prayer makes man's face beautiful and fine. Night prayer makes him morally good and agreeable, and makes him smell pleasantly. Night prayer increases sustenance, causes the debt to be paid, takes sorrow away, and makes man's vision strong." So, in fact, brothers and sisters, these night prayers are so important that it is said on the traditions that the dignity of a believer depends on this night prayer. And the greatness and glory is depending on avoiding bothering the people. These were some of the traditions on the importance of night prayer. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the World with Reporters.
Iran-Afghanistan Permanent Trade Center has been opened in the capital, Kabul. The center is in line with the two countries' policies of expanding bilateral ties and connecting business people of the two neighboring states. During the opening ceremony, Afghanistan's Minister of Industry and Commerce highlighted the country's expectations about trade between the two countries.
We expect to balance the trade with Iran. We want to export our goods to Iran, which enjoys a good market. Iran's export to Afghanistan is more than $2 billion a year, but I won't mention our export to Iran because it's a very small amount. We hope that Tehran modifies its laws so that we can increase our exports.
With the opening of this center in Kabul and its capabilities, it is believed that the Taliban government in Afghanistan is providing a platform for more economic connections between Tehran and Kabul.
This center is an example of good relations between Afghanistan and Iran. Both countries have a lot of potentials, and with the opening of this center, we hope that bilateral trade gets a big boost and Tehran and Kabul can be great partners.
The center has great capabilities which can have great effects on rebuilding Afghanistan and the war-torn country's infrastructure.
The priorities for this center are trade of industries, equipment and machineries, also food industry, mining industry and technology. We are also ready to set up an iron production line in Afghanistan. On the other side, mines and precious stones here are useful for Iran.
Iranian and Afghan officials hope that the center helps advance the export goals of the two countries. They highlighted that the development of sustainable trade and exports is the most important task of this center in Kabul.
Many believe the opening of such trade centers would have positive effects on Afghanistan's economy that has taken a lot of damage due to years of political and financial instability. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Even though inflation remains at a 40-year high, United States President Joe Biden has terminated a program which provided extra food money for over 40 million of the poorest Americans. The elderly, the disabled, students, poor children, and the working poor are now forced to find an average of nearly $100 more every month to spend on food. With sanctions on Russia still massively backfiring across the West, grocery prices here have soared more than 11% over the last year.
The families aren't purchasing food at the same price that they were pre-pandemic. So apart from having families come in more often, we may start seeing families that have to cut back on their housing budget. So what they typically spent on rent, utilities, they may have to start dipping into that to pay for groceries.
Experts on food insecurity contend that food aid to the poor has been insufficient, and that was long before the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program started seeing cuts. The expansion of so-called food stamps was both popular and successful, leading to an immediate 10% reduction in the overall poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022 about 40%. Give or take, we can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors. Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At the end of this month, at least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
By some accounts, the history of animation stretches back to the turn of the 20th century. However, the art finds its roots in antiquity. a 5,200-year-old vase found in Iran's burnt city in the 1970s features a series of five images that researchers have only recently identified as being sequential. Giving it a spin, one would see a goat leaping to snatch leaves from a tree. Fast forward to today, Iranian animations have made significant progress. While the first modern cinematic animations were produced in Iran about a decade ago, thanks to the efforts by Iran's talented youths, the country's animated movies have attracted the attention of a huge number of viewers. The number of high-quality animations has grown compared to previous years in Iran. The new award-winning animated blockbuster Lupetu is a perfect example. The name Lupetu is inspired by a word local people in Kerman province of Iran used to refer to handmade toys that mothers used to make for their children in the past. The animation is about a sanitarium where a doctor treats his mental patients by teaching them to make toys. An unknown culprit vandalizes the creative toy workshop, which is particularly popular among Iranian children, and causes its closure. The doctor's son, Ali, tries to help his father to solve the problem. The process of making the animation took over 3 years. It was ready to be screened in 2020. However, the coronavirus outbreak delayed the screening, and finally, it hit Iran's silver screens from early November 2022. The box office hit is one of the most popular on-screen films of Iranian cinemas right now. It managed to become the most popular movie in Iranian cinemas only within a month and a half of its release in the fall season. Lupetu has also taken part in various national and international festivals. Despite their success, the director of Lupetu says there is no room for complacency, adding, Iranian animation studios should redouble their efforts to keep up with the big names in the industry.
Iran's animation industry is progressing. It's perfect that children can watch this animation in the cinemas. But we have a long way to go. We should produce more high-quality cinematic animations to keep up with foreign animations.
Lupetu's producers say it will soon be screened in other countries, with Turkey and Russia showing interest to screen the animation in their cinemas.
Several high-quality cinematic animations have been made in Iran in recent years, and Lupetu is one of them. The blockbuster animation's success testifies that Iran has made significant progress that puts it on a par with big names in the industry.
In order to avoid paying billions of dollars in fines, it appears that the Pakistani government is attempting to find a solution for the completion of an Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project. This comes after Pakistani lawmakers demanded progress on the publicly funded project and warned that Pakistan could face its penalty if the pipeline project with Iran is not completed before the year end. The Petroleum Ministry officials warn that Pakistan will have to pay $18 billion as a fine if it terminates Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline agreement. The officials told lawmakers that Islamabad has spoken to the United States to request a waiver as there is a ban on importing gas from Iran. The parliamentarians asked the Pakistani Ministry of Foreign Affairs to summon the American envoy and demand that he either grant Islamabad permission to move forward with the project or provide funding to cover the fine. Washington has been pushing Islamabad to give up the plan to import gas from neighboring Iran. However, the government has so far publicly resisted the pressure, arguing that the project is vital to fulfill the country's energy needs.
We should revive the Iran-Pakistan pipeline. That is the key. And we also demand the lifting of sanctions which have been imposed by certain Western countries against Iran, because the sanctions are wrong, they are unjust, and they are immoral. And Iran, like Pakistan, is a peaceful country. They want to strengthen regional relations.
Like the rest of the world, Pakistan is no exception to the global energy crisis, which is worsening each passing day. Experts believe that pending gas pipeline project with Iran could be an immediate remedy to overcome the energy needs in Pakistan if the country manages to get out of the U.S. influence.
Because of the U.S. Importance in foreign relations, Pakistan has always been pressurized by the United States not to increase its trade with Iran and not to negotiate any agreements with Iran. Unfortunately, Pakistan has yielded to that pressure. Pakistan is importing gas from Qatar and other countries, Azerbaijan even, and why not import gas from Iran, which is cheaper than from so many other countries.
In 2009, the gas companies of both Pakistan and Iran signed an agreement under which Islamabad committed to building an 800-kilometer pipeline to the Iranian border by the end of 2014. However, due to the U.S. pressure, Islamabad could not fulfill its commitment. Iran has already finished a portion of the pipeline in its own territory from the gas field to the Pakistan border, where it should connect to the Pakistani part.
The call on the Pakistani government to step up efforts to complete Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project comes as Islamabad is already grappling with several crises here at home. Avoiding this $18 billion penalty could save the country from falling into another one. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Syrian political parties, along with Syria-based Palestinian factions, have gathered in Arnous Square in Damascus, calling on the U.S. and its Western allies to lift economic sanctions on Syria. Speakers said this Western siege on Syria is inhumane and requires urgent actions by the international community, considering that people in Syria are dealing with deteriorating economic conditions following the recent earthquakes.
We express our anger over the unilateral sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. Syrians suffered a lot as a result of such unjust and inhumane actions. Not lifting them is a crime against humanity. We call on the U.N. to shoulder its responsibilities and try to get such sanctions lifted.
We reiterate our support for Syria and reject the unjust seizure act, which led to shortages in basic needs. We call on the U.S. to stop looting Syria's resources and get out of the Arab country. We also call on Arab and Islamic nations to stand beside Syrians dealing with crises. We call on the Arab League to give Syria a seat back to the country.
Participants raised Syrian and Palestinian flags as well as banners asking for an end to the decades-long bans that have deprived them of their basic needs and resulted in a surge of food and medicine prices.
This is an unjust siege. We as Syrians are suffering from this siege in all aspects of our daily lives, starting from transportation, because the bans have caused a lack of fuel as well as shortage in medicine and also high food prices. All that is because of the imperial blockade.
Life changed so much following the sanctions. Prices went high. People are searching for their basic needs. This siege caused a shortage of so many basic commodities. We call on the world to do something and help us.
The recent earthquakes have further worsened the already deteriorating economic and humanitarian situation in Syria. The UN says even before the earthquake tragedy, 70% of the population needed humanitarian assistance due to the war on the country. One challenge after another, Syrians endured so many hardships in the past decade that made living a normal life a daily challenge. U.S. and EU sanctions exacerbated their suffering, and they demand an end to such injustice. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
The Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, has said that there is, quote, great expectations about his ongoing talks with Iranian officials over issues concerning their cooperation. The remarks sent a positive signal on the course of cooperation between the agency and Tehran. That positive assessment was also echoed by Mohammad Islami, head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization.
The Islamic Republic will in no way compromise on its national interests and its national security. These meetings show Tehran and the IAEA maintain a professional relationship based on trust, and that we attach great importance to abiding by the IAEA safeguards.
Islami added that IAEA reports have confirmed that Iran has not enriched uranium beyond 60% and that issues regarding claims that some uranium particles have been found in undeclared sites in Iran have been resolved. Grossi, for his part, said that the discussions are being held in an atmosphere of honesty and cooperation. Asked to comment on claims that IAEA has adopted a political approach towards Iran, he insisted that the agency is not a political tool for any country.
The IAEA has not been and will never be a political tool of anybody. I, as Director General, I am independent. I am under no country's instructions. And we act in a way that is very transparent. Member states have a board of governors. Every step we take is scrutinized. And I think that what is important is to work together, as the Vice President was saying, work on the cooperation, which is very important, on peaceful uses, work on the observance of the comprehensive safeguard agreements, and all the rest is speculation.
Grossi was also asked by reporters present in the presser to comment on the Israeli regime's total lack of accountability regarding its nuclear weapons program. Grossi said that there are limitations to the agency's inspections of those that have not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
That being said, let me conclude this important question by saying that every country in the world should be a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty.
The visit appears to have helped improve relations between Iran and the IAEA, particularly scientific and technical collaboration between them. The two officials said that Iran's annual nuclear science conference, which has so far been held on a national level, will be upgraded to an international conference from next year.
Both sides have expressed satisfaction with the talks, and Mr. Grossi himself has called the atmosphere positive, which could pave the way for the revival of the nuclear deal. Gizumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Even though inflation remains at a 40-year high, United States President Joe Biden has terminated a program which provided extra food money for over 40 million of the poorest Americans. The elderly, the disabled, students, poor children, and the working poor are now forced to find an average of nearly $100 more every month to spend on food. With sanctions on Russia still massively backfiring across the West, grocery prices here have soared more than 11% over the last year.
The families aren't purchasing food at the same price that they were pre-pandemic. So apart from having families come in more often, we may start seeing families that have to cut back on their housing budget. So what they typically spent on rent, utilities, they may have to start dipping into that to pay for groceries.
Experts on food insecurity contend that food aid to the poor has been insufficient, and that was long before the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program started seeing cuts. The expansion of so-called food stamps was both popular and successful, leading to an immediate 10% reduction in the overall poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022 about 40%. Give or take, we can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors.
Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At the end of this month, at least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Allah, 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 Allah.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن ملکون.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
I request